Greetings, Earthlings, and other people in the universe. You are listening to Horror Nerds at Church, a ridiculously queer podcast where we take
a deep dive
into a horror film, and this one actually is kind of a horror film, and talk about how it connects to queerness, religion, and theology. My name is Pace Warfield, and I am the S, which is the only thing that distinguishes the title of this movie from the first movie.
Which is ridiculous. Ridiculous. And I'm Pastor Emily, and I am the airlock that always manages to save the day in the very last moment, which is not distinguishable between the first movie and the second. Follow us on Patreon at patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch, starting at only $5. Oh, it starts at only $5 to sign up, and you get exclusive access to hours of bonus content, including BooTube episodes about TV shows like Star Wars Rebels and Ahsoka, movie commentaries like the Predator movies, bonus episodes, and more.
Ooh.
Both specific to this season and past seasons. And check out our show notes for any content warnings for this episode.
Yeah, our Patreon is really where it's at. If y'all haven't gotten to our Patreon yet, that's okay. It's fine. There is in fact a free trial that you can do for our $10 tier, and that's running this entire season. So you can check it out.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I should trial the $10. I'm at the $5, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, but I support the podcast that I also co-host.
Yes, and I support the podcast that Emily, the other podcast that Emily co-hosts, and that I have on occasion co-hosted. But yeah, our Patreon, there's so much cool stuff on there. Like the boot tubes that Emily referenced. We have done coverage, literally shows like Golden Girls for the BooTubes. That was our very first BooTube, was on the Golden Girls. That was the only BooTube, no, one of two BooTubes that Emily was not a part of. But
we've done Doctor Who a couple different times. Yeah, we've done Doctor
Who, but we also do like legit scary shit too. So like, if you're listening to the Alien part of this franchise and you're more into that than you are the Star Wars part,
we did that's Rose fine. Red.
We've done Rose Red, we've done Vampire Hunter D, we've done a few scary...
We also did Vampirina.
Yeah, so lots of non-scary ones, scary ones, and everything in between. So check it out, this is really fun. And for the $10 tier, you get full-length regular episodes, but just exclusive to you, whereas everybody, $5 and $10 tier, gets the boot tubes and the movie commentaries.
It's true. So if you're listening to us wax poetically about Star Wars and you're like, but what about Rogue One or Solo? That's in our horror buff tier.
Or so, if you really want to hear our thoughts on Ewok's Caravan of Courage.
Also that one, which there was a slight panic moment because we recorded ahead during the strike. There was a slight panic moment that I had a few weeks ago when Pace was like, I don't know if this recorded the whole episode or not for Ewok's Caravan of Courage.
It didn't seem like Emily's track fully uploaded, so I was worried.
Yeah, I was like about to panic that I was going to have to watch it again. But phew, did not have to. You get the original.
So yeah, don't worry, the movie, yes, is trash, but the... Our discussion of it is not, so definitely.
It's true. We did a whole season of Twilight, if you need to know that we can be brilliant and exude brilliance from trash. That is a great example. And that's free. so that can entice you into the rest of them.
Free, the only cost is your soul for having to watch the Twilight movies.
Also, but you don't really have to watch them.
That's true. You can just listen.
We've all absorbed enough by osmosis that, like, we're good. Also, you get a merch discount.
Yeah, you get a merch discount, which works now. So.
Yeah, it does.
And we have all sorts of stuff up there from, like, what is the word I'm looking for? A Zoom background, stuff like that. I mean, anyone can access the Zoom backgrounds on our Patreon, but, like.
Yeah. But we can link to the Zoom background so that people can check it out and see what else they're missing.
Yeah. So, before we get into the movie we're covering today, though, how have you been, Emily? How is life treating you?
I have been very delightedly nerdy, actually.
Yeah, so...
This season of Horror Nerds at Church and this season of Nerds at Church are lining up so spectacularly. Like, it is just all spacey stuff all the time for me, and I absolutely adore it. So we just, as of when we're recording this, our episode on the solar system just dropped, and I finished a book that I was reading for it that I started reading, like, the night, like, 36 hours before we recorded, so I didn't finish, but I finally finished that book, How I Killed Pluto and Why I Had It Coming, which was delightful, and really helped me come to terms with my own grief and feelings around that. Apparently there was also a funeral for Pluto, so that's helpful, and the Pluto killer was there, and he liked my post that I made about the episode, because I tagged him in it. But yeah, so it's been all solar system all the time. And the next episode that will have already come out by the time this airs was basically a private class with an astrophysicist. So Dr. Katie Mack was on, and basically I got to ask all of my nerdy questions about dark matter and dark energy and all things astrophysics. So it was amazing. Yeah, so I'm just like riding high.
I love it. I love it.
I do have to, like, I have now started to tour back into Star Wars Return of the Jedi from a certain point of view, which we still need to finish reading. So
I feel like we will probably get to that episode at the end of the season, because I don't know how we're going to fit it in. What? But we'll see.
I'm here for it. I'm planning on finishing it in February.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see if Pace can finish it. For once, Emily might be waiting on Pace to finish the book instead of the other way around.
That would be a miracle.
So, yeah. Oh, to borrow a question, because you asked this in our...
Wait, how are you doing?
Oh, I am doing well overall. I've just been so busy this past few weeks. I just feel like so scatterbrained. With everything going on. But really good news today is that my partner and I got a house that, well, not, we're renting a house. We are approved to rent the house. We are not fancy people can afford their own property, to be clear. But we are, so we're renting a, we got approved for the house we really wanted, which has a huge backyard for the dogs and stuff. So I'm just really excited for that. We found that out earlier today. So, looking forward to that. So, that's good. But to borrow a question from our friends of the podcast, the Irreverent Bible Talk, are you drinking anything fun? Because you texted about it. So, I'm curious if you are drinking something fun.
It's not as fun as when they were on. When they were on, I knew the question was coming. And so, I was like, I'm going to make a Sabbath sips. when I had a friend, we had friends visiting over the holidays, and one of them lives in Vermont currently and brought a maple infused bourbon. This is not that, because I drank all of that. This is a new bottle that I found at our local liquor store that is maple infused bourbon. That may or may not be the same brand. I couldn't remember, but it's very tasty.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Awesome.
I love maple. Are you imbibing?
In Pot, yes, and alcohol, no, but I am drinking Mountain Dew Code Red, a favorite of mine. Please sponsor us, Mountain Dew, because you have lots of money. But I wanted to ask this question specifically because I need to evangelize my love, which is problematic, to be clear, but there is no ethical consumption in capitalism, we know this, but I am obsessed with Ruby chocolate.
You were talking about that. I don't know what it is.
Good. So... So first of all, the unethical stuff about chocolate, just in case you don't know, is that chocolate tends to be grown in the near the equator between the two, which is also prime rainforest land. So a lot of chocolate companies use very cheap or slave labor to produce their chocolate, and do not pay fair wages. They also clear out rainforests and stuff like that. So there's all sorts
John Oliver actually did a phenomenal... I am not generally a huge fan of, like, This Is How White Guys, but John Oliver did a phenomenal episode about chocolate. And, like, basically, there is no chocolate that can be 100% guaranteed to be free of slave labor. And there's, like, one company that pays, like, three times the market value in order to, and does like actual stuff to try to avoid being slave labor chocolate.
And so just be aware that yes, I know about this, and yes, also chocolate is delicious, and so it's something that I still imbibe in or enjoy as much as I can given the state of the world. But Ruby chocolate is the fourth kind of natural base confection produced from cacao beans, which is what chocolate is made out of. So we have dark chocolate, we have milk chocolate, we have white chocolate, which is made from the oil of the cacao beans, but not actually the pulp itself, which is why it's white and doesn't have that more bitter flavor of regular chocolate.
Slash any.
Yes, and all that. And then, but then Ruby chocolate was invented about 10, 15 years ago, and it's only really started to become commercially available in the last 5 years or so. But it is a style of chocolate that uses the fat of the cacao beans with a little bit of the pulp of it. So it still has that bitter chocolate flavor that makes the bulk of dark and milk chocolate that we know of. But because it has a higher fat content from the beans, it has a different flavor profile. So it is... it is this rose-ish color, so it goes well with Laertes Jerusalem Sunday, which is the fourth Sunday in Lent coming up. So if you want to use it as a sermon illustration, go for it. And then, because pink is the color for that day, just like it is for the third Sunday.
Wow, you're that kind of litter queer.
Okay. Is that wrong? Like, I think it's cool that we can have two Sundays that are pink, because pink's a cool color. So, of course, I want
to talk. Pink is a cool color. And I think that's delightful. You're the first person that I've ever known to have said something with, like, any sort of authority about, like, and Lent has a pink day, and it is this day.
Oh, well. So. Yeah. So, I know I'm super nerding out about this, but I'm not going to apologize. Keep going.
Finish the story.
Yeah. So, Ruby chocolate is made, like I said, from the fat plus some of the pulp. And cacao beans naturally come in a few colors, but a lot of them have a red or pinkish tint to them. So when you use the higher fat, produces a pink chocolate, which is why it gets the name Ruby chocolate. And the flavor has a little bit of that bitterness of regular chocolate that you might recognize, but it also has like a very kind of berry kind of flavor, because it's like more of the cacao beans fat content and sucrose content, so it like it retains the berryness of the chocolate bean. So it kind of tastes a little bit like strawberries and cream, very slightly like that, but still being chocolate and not having any other ingredients aside from milk and sugar and all that stuff that goes into normal chocolate bars.
I might have to try that sometime.
Yeah, but Ruby chocolate, I love it. So good.
I like it.
So it's my new obsession. I mean, I've been enjoying Ruby chocolate since it became commercially available, but like I'm on a Ruby chocolate kick lately and can't get enough. As far what I've been watching, still watching.
We've both been watching.
Yeah.
Doctor Who.
A lot of Doctor Who.
Also, apparently our house missed a season of Queer Eye, so we're also circling back around to that.
Apparently there is drama between Bobby and Tam, too, that hit the news.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't know what all it is, because neither have, like, fully said, but, like, they've unfollowed each other's Instagram accounts and stuff like that.
So. Oh, no. Is this the end of Queer Eye?
Well, yeah. This was the last season, the one that just came out.
It was supposed to be the last season? Yeah. Nobody tells me nothing. This is... Oh, no!
And and the feud seemed to come about unrelated to it being the last season. So it's not the last season because of the feud, but the feud is part of the press surrounding the last season. So, anyway, yeah. So Doctor Who,
so sad.
Doctor Who and Queer Eye. Anything else you've been watching or reading that you want to shout out?
I've been a little busy on the podcast, so no. There's literally nothing else in my life besides those two right now.
I have
more than that.
Yeah, I've been watching Doctor Who, of course, where I am. I started before Emily, and also I've been sometimes needing before bed to watch a few episodes to, like, kind of disconnect from the day and stuff. So I've also been getting a little bit ahead of my own schedule. So I am nearing the end of the first Doctor's tenure. And the end of the 10th Doctor's tenure in my watch through.
Nice. I just finished the Aztecs.
I love the episode. I mean, there's so many problematic things in the episode.
So many problematic.
But the general idea of the episode, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's the farthest I've been in Classic Who. So.
Nice.
I'm not 100% positive, but yeah. I've been keeping steady. Sometimes with Classic Who, I have to, like, finish up the next day or start early, but
you are nearing the end of the first season of Classic Who. That's pretty cool.
I am. I'm very excited about that, actually.
Yeah, and then I've not been watching much movies or stuff, but I have been obsessed with true crime lately. So if I'm not watching Doctor Who to help me fall asleep, ironically as it might seem, I'm watching true crime stuff to fall asleep. And there's this new one called...
We call that Fun Times at the Island here.
Yeah. I'm watching this one called Mark of Serial Killer, which is on Peacock. It's new to me. It's not a new show, but I don't know why. I'm just really digging that one. And it's also fun to... It's also fun in a LOL sob kind of way to notice just how incompetent the police are in all of the serial killer shows and how some of the shows are better at, like, being frank about that and sharing the facts, and others try to, like, hide the fact that the police are awful and do, like, propaganda.
I also the other day I was having trouble falling asleep, and I was like, you know what, I've never watched the Barbie movie, so I put that on, but I put the ASL version on, and it's really cool because it just has, like, a little person in the corner signing the whole thing, and I really love that. So
yeah, ASL is one thing. I am notoriously, my brain does not grasp languages the way that many other people do. So I just am very, very bad at language. Like, I'm really good at learning the, what is the word I'm looking for? The grammar of a language. I am not good at retaining any vocabulary. So signing is something I've always wanted to learn, but I just find it very difficult to retain.
I have heard that for folks where languages in general are hard, that signing can be actually easier or not as hard in the same way, at least because it's such a physical one instead of a verbal one. Which would help me, but I also am good at languages, so.
I heard that too, and I have taken a few sign language, like, not like a full class, but like seminars and stuff over my years as I continue to add, and it just doesn't stick with, like, I know a portion of the alphabet, but like that's it. So I even find sign language hard in my experience. So it doesn't mean that doing a more intensive course wouldn't help. But I also heard that about Hebrew. Like one of my my Hebrew professors, Hebrew. Of course biased, said that Hebrew is, for many people have issues learning languages, Hebrew seems to be easier. Not in my experience.
My experience is that when people are learning biblical languages, they're either Hebrew people or Greek people, and not usually both. That they tend towards one or the other being easier or harder.
I found both incredibly difficult, and I took both. I've taken coursework.
And look at you being a PhD. Hey, yeah. Shout out to all the PhDs who have to learn languages and pass exams in those languages, even when it's hard.
Yes, thank God. Like I said, I am good at retaining grammar, but not on vocabulary. So thank God the school I go to, Graduate Theological Union, lets you use a dictionary for it. So like that's the only way I passed. And I had to look.
How about just, thankfully,
yes,
I was able to use tools that are very helpful, and I passed.
I did.
You passed, period. Doesn't matter what tools you did or did not use, you passed.
Yeah. The only language I have some kind of vocabulary ingrained is French, but that's just because I took French in middle school and high school, and then literally every single higher education program has done French, like as a requirement that I've done. So college, grad school, and PhD. So like French I know better than others, and still I really struggle with the vocabulary in French, even though I know the stuff.
That's because French is made up of just like utter ridiculousness, where they were paid by word count, by letter count, and so they just added extra letters that don't make sounds when they were writing it down.
I do not think that's true, but okay.
That's the folklore.
I do not think that's true.
Well, feel free to tell me what the actual history is, but nobody has corrected me so far. Maybe this will be our first angry letter.
Yeah, maybe. That's not our sorrow, surprisingly. Y'all have been quiet on that one so far. So that was a long time. I don't even know how we got to that, but yay. We're talking about the movie Aliens by James Cameron, directed by James Cameron, came out in 1986, the year after I was born. And that was the same year of a few big movies, including Top Gun, Star Trek IV, which is A Voyage Home, which is many people's favorite. It's the one with the whales, if people know what that means.
It took me multiple tries to like realize that was Star Trek and not Star Wars.
Oh.
Maybe I'll just like say as much as I can just to piss people off so that we get some fan mail.
I don't want to troll our listeners.
I do.
Go for it. But then
literally made a Pluto poll in Nerds at Church.
You did.
I'm here for the trolling. I love you all. Yeah. I just miss your voices and want to hear from you.
Also came out that year, the comedy classic Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is a really fucked up movie if you watch it again, so watch it. Short Circuit, another fucked up movie because there's some brown skin acting going on in there. In 1986, come on, you'd think we would have been past that.
Yeah, that was the year of my birth, which was the most important thing that came out that day, me.
Disagree, because Care Bears movie 2, A New Generation came out that year. That is probably the only movie that I would rank higher in my love than my dear friend Emily. Sorry.
Wow. I'm going to have to rethink my priorities.
Jeez. I just love Care Bears. Anyway, sorry. An American Tale came out that year. The Great Mouse Detective came out that year. So two competing mouse animated films.
Mices are cool.
Yes. Cheeses for our Mises, to quote Muppets, A Christmas Carol.
Speaking of mice.
Yep. But then
Critters in the House.
Yeah, so In our horror realm, what came out in 1986 was House, Critters. Critters would have a sequel directed by the director of Lord of the Rings, so I'm blanking on his name right now, but not many people know he got a start in horror movies.
Peter?
Yeah, Peter Jackson. He's directed a few horror movies, and they're all really good. And people don't tend to think of him as a horror director, but that's how he got a start. Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, came out that year. Labyrinth came out that year, speaking of Muppets, a Jim Henson film. Psycho 2. Howling 2. Oh, maybe we should do a crossover movie commentary on that, because it's a horror movie, so perfect for this podcast, and it's a Muppet movie.
It's a Muppets movie.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I like it.
The Howling 2, Your Sisters
and
Are
Werewolves. It's out of this world.
Yes. Maximum Overdrive, which is Stephen King's only directorial film, where that he is based off one of his short stories, but he also directed the movie, and it is awful. And he was also, but he also has admitted he was high on coke the entire time. So you can tell. I think everybody in that production was high on coke. And then Friday the 13th, Part 6, which we have covered in Season 2 of this podcast,
and we will eventually cover
with Emily. Yeah. Jason Lives is one we covered with Abel, and then Jason Takes Manhattan is one we covered with Carla. And I feel like those are the two of the funniest back-to-back episodes we've ever had on the podcast. And then we had The Fly, came out that year, the remake with Jeff Goldblum, another fantastic movie I can't wait to cover on the podcast. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and a favorite of mine, Little Shop of Horrors.
Which I've never actually seen. I've just seen parts of, like, the songs and stuff, even though that is how I dressed up my Basil for Little Basil Shop of Horrors for the first ever pet and plant costume contest.
Yep, and won. So.
Mm-hmm. I have seen more of the non-horror movies than horror movies this time.
Which is usual. It was just that one time.
Yeah, that one time was weird.
Yeah. So what was your first memory of seeing this film or experiencing the film?
Cheers, y'all. Last week for this episode.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. I was giving this question more thought since we recorded our Alien episode. Because if you remember that episode, I said I don't fully remember when I first saw the franchise, any of the entries in the franchise. But I know it's somewhere in childhood, middle school, high school, around there. I'm pretty sure it's middle school, so I was right around the age of 12, so I'm not sure if you would take a drink or not, but it was definitely at my dad's house, and they were having a marathon. It was a Saturday day because my parents were divorced, so I'd spend every other weekend at my dad's house, and so on Saturdays, oftentimes, we would just watch and this had, maybe I was in, younger than 12, because I probably was in middle school, because there wasn't much to do on a rainy day back then before, like, the advent of smartphones and high-speed internet and stuff like that. Like, we had internet, but not much.
Besides, so, like, go outside.
On a rainy day? I mean, you can go outside on a rainy day, but if you don't want to get wet, and wet clothes is a sensory issue for me as somebody on the spectrum.
Okay, fair. I was gonna say, jumping in puddles.
Yeah. So we were marathoning, and I'm pretty sure it was like on TNT or some network, was marathoning the Alien film. So we watched that. So I probably was around 12, 11, 12, 13, somewhere in that age range. And
around then.
Yeah. So I saw this movie for the first time as part of that. And my dad was a fan of the series. So I remember he was excited when it came on to TNT, and that's one of the reasons we watched it. And I honestly loved the movies when I saw them too.
Cool.
So there we go.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any background for this one, Emily? Sorry.
That's cute. The only time I've ever had, like, considerable background was the first movie, and half of that was because you had typed it out, and the other half was because I had watched the movie commentary episode.
Yeah.
Or the movie commentary. Yeah. No, I got nothing. I already said the most important background, which is that it was the year of my birth. So.
Yes. And the year the more important thing, which is the year of the Care Bear movie. Sorry, I love you. I'm kidding. It's not real. I mean, maybe it's a little real.
I was like, don't lie. Don't lie to me. I can take it. I'm strong. Break my heart, paste dubs.
Sorry, it's just
did you know that paste dubs sounds a lot like paste pay stubs?
Yeah, I know.
I just realized that.
A lot of things, my first name especially, sounds like because I have been hearing feedback. Not feedback. I don't mean it that way. Please do not start writing angry letters to my boss. I should probably cut this out. But I've been jokingly her saying people never catch my name when she talks about it. They always think it's something else because, first of all, Pace is a name that not many people have. And if they do have the name, it's usually like the Spanish equivalent of Paco or the Italian equivalent of Pace as opposed to Pace. Mm-hmm. So it's a unique name, but also it just sounds like a lot of other things, like you were saying with pay stubs and stuff. So apparently my name is hard for people to get. So when people just say it in conversation,
which is ironic, I never really thought about, because it's like
really it's
one syllable,
right?
And an actual word. It's the iconic non-binary name.
Yes. And it rhymes, but it rhymes with so much shit, like space.
It really does.
Face. Ace.
Ace of bases, paces.
Yeah. Okay. we will eventually get to the background.
What?
I'll try. So, can you tell this could be an off-the-rails episode already?
Uh-huh.
Listeners, we're at 32 minutes in and we're just getting to actually talk about the background. So.
You say that like they don't expect that from us all the time.
Right.
I blame this on you. I asked if we were drinking and you said, yeah, go get a drink.
But I'm also getting elevated, so that's both of us. Yeah. But anyway, to the behind the scenes. So after the first movie came out, it was kind of a sleeper hit. It became a runaway success, kind of a cult classic. The iconography of the film, especially the design of the aliens, as we spent a lot of time talking about by Geiger, really like entered that, seared that film in the chestburster scene and stuff, seared that film into like the public imagination. And yet 20th Century Fox wasn't quite on board with the sequel. By the time the movie really started to become popular, it was the late 80s. Empire Strikes Back had just come out, and they knew there was going to be a third Star Wars film in 1983, which we'll cover as we were just talking about. But Fox kind of felt like the space craze was, or the space fad was starting to slow down or end. So they didn't think it would get much profit. And they also kind of thought the first film was a fluke. As we know about the evilness of many corporations, especially Hollywood studio corporations, as we saw at the WGA SAG after strikes. But they tend to like have a very particular cis white gaze on approach to what they think audiences want in a movie. And so that fact that Alien was successful, being front led by a woman, they thought was like a fluke or a weird thing and not actually something that people would like. So it just kind of, so Fox just didn't seem super interested in making it. But when Return of the Jedi came out and it was still like Star Wars is still very much a thing and space was still very much a thing, they decided to start looking for a script for the, and start like doing early pre-production stuff for the movie. They came across the script to the film Terminator by James Cameron, and Terminator was already in development, but it was basically Terminator is a horror movie with imagine a horror movie with Rambo as an antagonist. And that is what Terminator is. They kind of like love that idea for it, since Alien was a horror movie, to kind of go in that direction. So they hired Cameron to do an initial approach for it. And he was in pre-production for Terminator, so he just wrote a script treatment. They didn't really think he would be the director. But then after Terminator came out and was a huge success in 1984, they officially hired Cameron on to direct the movie as well. But he immediately signed on and wrote a treatment within 3 days of signing. And he loved the idea of having a script treatment. So basically, like, a instead of like a script with like the full dialogue and scenes and stuff, an early treatment is basically like you describe in a fair amount of detail the plot, but you're not going into like every single line. You're not going into every single scene.
Okay.
So it's kind of like that. And it was like 46 pages long. Like, he really was into this. So, but he and some of the production people decided to have do Rambo in space and have space Marines was the big thing. So, there is this episode of one of my favorite podcasts in the world, Behind Nerds at Church, of course, it's a defunct podcast now, but it is still one of my favorites. It's called I Was There Too, hosted by Matt Gourley. And he did an episode where basically the point of that podcast is you would interview like the background character actors in a movie. Ooh. As opposed to the main characters or the director.
It's like from a certain point of view.
Yeah, pretty much. Like a whole podcast, though, that was that. Mm-hmm. And so he interviewed Jeanette Goldstein, who played Vasquez in the movie. Uh-huh. And it is such a great episode. So I'll try to link that in this show notes if it's not behind the paywall.
I want to watch that. Listen to that.
But I meant to listen to that again because they go into some of the background of aliens, but I didn't have a chance to. But yeah, what I do remember is that Sigourney Weaver originally didn't want to return. She was convinced when conversations with Cameron revealed that this wasn't just a money grab by the studio, but Cameron really wanted to tell a message and have the movie have some emotional depth. Mm. I don't think it does. We'll get there. Anyway. Also, the production was apparently difficult because James Cameron is notoriously difficult to work with. And people tend not to say nice things about him after they do movies with him. Yeah, like Titanic, apparently, like so many takes that the actors got hypothermia and stuff like that from being in the pool, all sorts of stuff. So, but this movie still became super successful, which guaranteed a third film. And that one sat in production hell a little bit. We'll get into that in the next movie. But this movie is considered to be a favorite of many people in the franchise because it is really fun. It's an action movie. It's meant to be fun. Whereas the first one's moody and atmospheric and you have to think about it and scary. This one's just fun. So a lot of people just like the funness of this one. And I will agree, it's a pretty fun movie. And then there is an extended version, a director's cut, and it reveals that Ripley had a daughter who died of old age while she was asleep in space. Ripley was asleep in space. And that's the biggest difference. There's some alternate takes and stuff in there. But it does give some new insight into Ripley's relationship with the queen alien mother. And then also Ripley's relationship with with Newt, played by Carrie Henn, the young girl that she finds. Yeah. And kind of adopts, in a sense, as a daughter.
And her, like, when she does decide to go in the first place, it's like, nobody is, like, none of her family who was there initially is left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she basically, like, wakes up to a whole new world. Like, that's wild. And they really don't talk about that, even in the director's film, aside from the line about her daughter. But, I mean, that in itself, I think they could have spent a lot of time, like, I mean, that there are many movies made about that itself. So, like, people kind of waking up to a different time. What is your one-sentence summary of this movie?
Ripley is still the only competent one.
So sad, but so true.
I mean, Newt is pretty competent, but yes, also, like, a traumatized kid, so, meh.
Yeah. My one-sentence summary, if you recall, for the first movie was slasher in space. My one-sentence for this one is slashers in spaces. Because you have to add the S to it. That's the only thing different.
There's so much wrong with that.
I honestly think now it's like overdone.
It's hilarious.
But I think it's really clever to have the first movie, there's one alien. The second movie, there's many. And so just adding the S to it makes it that much more scary going into it. It's clever. But it's also obnoxious, especially now that it's overdone.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we can roll through the movie. And I will start.
I gotta go first because mine is the opening scene. That scene when they have like the machine scan the spaceship is fascinating. The like it looks so cool because you get the like swirly patterns of dust and stuff. I love it.
It is really cool. I basically the whole first part of the movie when she's on Earth. It's her arguing with men and not being listened to. Like, that's the entire femme, women, and many, most probably non-binary people experience. Just not being listened to by men. So that in of itself is a horror.
Also, there were multiple points in this movie where I was like, I called it! And I have the evidence because I tapped my notes as we were watching. I called it when I think Ripley even said that Burke was that was the only one that she trusts. And I was like, why would you trust Burke? Like, who thinks Burke is trustworthy? And then I was like, well, at least he goes with her. So, like, his life is also in it and at risk. But nope. I was right. Not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love that Burke wears, like, this suit, I get like a basically their version of what a 2300 suit would look like, which is basically what a suit in the 80s looked like, but with a little bit of a thinner tie. I was like, okay, cool. Those space age ties, kind of weird, but kind of love it. And also, Burke is agreed, so swarmy from the get go. I don't, nothing about him I like or trust.
And then we got to Vasquez, who, like, I loved the character of Vasquez. Right. Stereotypical butch lesbian, Latina lesbian, right? Like, and then I, right after I, like, wrote that, I was like, she's gonna die, isn't she?
Yeah.
Called it again.
But I do love the queer coding of some, I mean, now it's definitely a trope, to be clear. And yet I also just love that there is room in space in this franchise for queer women, which there is not in many science fiction franchises from the 70s and 80s. So
yeah also Jonesy got lucky this time and got to stay safe, which when they did that I was like, okay, I didn't have words, I didn't write it down, but there was something in me that was like, okay, something is like, what's gonna be the Jonesy in this one? Newt is the Jonesy.
Exactly.
So I didn't write it down, but I had an inkling. Also, I have a gnat or something flying around my head, so that's my weird flappy grabby motions. Also, I love space.
Right. I feel like there is not as much interest in this movie being scientifically accurate as in the first one. And the first one, even there is like some hard things to sell, especially to Emily, like the water and HVAC system and stuff and artificial gravity. But this one, I feel like there's even less just concern for it. It's...
Yeah. Well, and I think so in the last 2 weeks or whatever, Kay and I recorded our Nerds at Church episode, which is like our 9th episode. so not coming out for a little bit, but we recorded it on space travel and pop culture. And so we recorded on space travel and pop culture, and there's like different ways that different like franchises or whatever decide to organize their universe. Some try to be like super scientific and accurate and right, like Interstellar or Martian. Both of those. And part of it is that the science is part of the plot. And then there are others like Doctor Who or Star Wars, where like it's not about the science. And the science is not integral to the plot. And so they don't, they just say like, it's just a like, in this universe, this is how it works. And we invite you to suspend disbelief to enter fully into the universe. And so I feel like that's where they were like shifting into. It's not my default. And so the first movie I was like.
I think you will love when we get to Star Trek at some point, because Star Trek definitely tries to be more scientific.
Kay and I mentioned it on the podcast that you and Kay have a plot and a scheme to get me to watch it. So
yeah, so we'll see. Mm-hmm. I love Star Trek, personally. It's very problematic too, but like what long-running franchise of any genre or kind is not problematic?
Also, I don't look military. Right. Like, those guys are jerks. Literally, in the movies.
They are.
Also, it seemed like they just dropped people through space without spacesuits or helmets.
At that point, I believe they were in the planet's atmosphere, but still, it, again, not trying to be scientifically accurate in any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, but like, there's not caring for scientific precision, and there's not caring about science.
Yeah. I mean, I will give James Cameron one piece of credit to him, which is that he has grown in his care about science. The Avatar movies have a closer adherence to science.
Yeah, but those are just like slightly veiled imperialism.
Yes, for sure.
What I'm hearing is I'm just like not particularly interested in James Cameron.
Same. Yeah.
Okay.
We can agree on that. he is a very beloved director, though, so by many people. So if you are a James Cameron fan, please feel free to write in and tell us what you like about him or his
movies. Redeeming quality there could possibly be, since he treats people terribly and doesn't care about science.
Formerly doesn't care about science.
Well.
Yeah. I do like the concept, though, of this movie, like the idea of while Ripley's been asleep, the planet has been colonized or is in the process of being colonized. Mm-hmm. And then the slowly unraveling mystery of this one is that, oh, it was done so intentionally once again by the Utani Corporation to access the aliens like it was in the first one. But I just love the idea that like, it ups the stakes so much in that now there's actually people there and beyond just a small crew, but there's people there and we learn that most of them are dead and then we meet Newt and all that. But it's just a very interesting way to increase the stakes from the first film in a way that feels very much like related to the concept of the first film.
Yeah. So just for clarity, the colonists on the planet are sent there. Why do they think they're sent there?
To colonize the planet with a few operatives among them to also look for the aliens. Who so
people are just like want to go colonize a planet for funsies with their family.
Yes.
Okay. And then the real reason that they go, that the company sends them, is to look for aliens.
Yeah, to look for the xenomorphs because they want to use them for military and make a lot of money off of them.
So, Brink? Brick? Who is it? The asshole.
Burke.
So Burke, the whole time, knows that he's just flat out lying to Ripley. And that they were looking for aliens intentionally and that there is no intention to destroy them all.
But maybe not the whole time, but at very least by the time he is sent out there, he knows. I feel like in the beginning, he doesn't know. And in his initial conversations with her, he doesn't know. But this is just my own reading of the film.
That's very generous. That's very Eighth Commandment-y of you.
But then once he goes back to them, it's like Ripley is saying this really weird thing about the aliens, and they're like, "Come here, we have to tell you." And they like tell him at that point. Is how I read it, but he could have known the whole time, true.
I mean, he's a sleazeball, so who knows? Yeah. I did love one of the things that I absolutely adore is kids are brilliant. Mm-hmm. So there was somebody who sent me, I think Kay sent it to me. There was this thing of like talking to this kid, and this kid is like, "I was born really far away from my sibling." They're like, "Yeah, you're like born almost exactly 6 months apart. The farthest away," I think is what they said. They're like, "No." I'm like, "On the other side of the sun." And I was which is true about me and my sibling. My sibling had to travel around the sun 1.5 times, and we were born at like almost exactly the farthest apart we could ever have been born.
That is brilliant, though. Look at that.
Yeah. And so then when Ripley's trying to bond with Newt and it's like, "Well, does Casey have bad dreams? I don't think Casey has bad, like, should we ask?" And then Newt's like, "Ripley, Casey doesn't have bad dreams because she's plastic."
Yeah.
Like, this kid is well beyond the area of make-believe, like, does not need to make-believe anything because reality is terrifying.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love kids.
I also just love, basically, this is one of the first movies, and I want to talk about this in a deep dive, too, was one of the first women-fronted action movies. The first one was a woman-fronted horror movie with some action elements, I would say, and sci-fi, too, whereas this one is very much an intention, like, it follows, it's basically the plot of the other movies we're covering, Predator, very similar plot. Marines going up against an alien, like, but this is the first one of that very kind of consistent genre of 80s action movies that has a woman as a protagonist. And so I love that Ripley is the gender bending action hero, and the fate, and like she even cuts her hair shorter in this movie and stuff, so maybe she's queer coded too, I don't know. We can talk about Ripley's sexuality as we go on, because it's never like explicitly said, but each of the movies kind of, I feel like, has a little bit different take on that. Then in that face off in the yellow loading, like, there's that scene which kind of jokes about the sexism of her doing the loading machine in the beginning and proving to the guys that she can do all that stuff that they think she can't do because she's a woman. But then in the end, she uses that very machine to fight off the alien, who is also a woman, of that species, of the xenomorph species, or described to be, not that we can say for sure what kind of sex or gender something that is not even from this planet would have, but the two face off in this really epic battle, and it's just like such high action movie camp and galore and all the camp of 80s action, but to have it be Ripley doing it is just like such a, nowadays we don't think about it in the days post Buffy, but this is really the first time that this happened, where there's like a woman who saves the day in an action movie role.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's part of what Star Wars was too, right? Having Leia be not just a princess, but like a princess who fights for her, who literally and physically fights for her people.
And yet, even in that one, as we talked about, like, she's still a side character. It's Luke's narrative. She's along for the ride in the first movie. And also,
clearly, Pace, you have not read our most recent newsletter that went out where I explain who the main character is.
And yes, yes.
Leia is definitely the second character, like, the main organic.
I love it. I love it. Yes. But also, there's still that romantic love triangle that they're setting up in the first movie and second, and that kind of gets resolved in the third one. Whereas Ripley, like, there is
resolved.
No...
They find out their siblings' pace.
Yeah, and it fixes it. Problem solved. Because then it's taboo to continue. So, but this one, like, it kind of, like, you can read, if you're being generous, that the dude, Michael Bain, Hicks, that's his name in the movie, could be a love interest for her, but like there's nothing in the movie itself or the text of the movie itself, I would say.
He's just not a terrible human being.
Yeah, that makes it
which makes him that, automatically a love interest by default.
Yes. And yet there's no kissing, there's no romance, there's no like really flirting or anything.
Well, and she ditches him to go back for the kid.
Yeah, exactly. And she, like, he's kind of the damsel in distress. She saves him and then also doesn't hook up with him because she's like not creepy, like how all the guys who save damsels in distress try to hook up with her after saving her. Gross. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's something about the character of Ripley that is A, ahead of its time, and B, still very fresh in today's world where we still have movies that do not give women, like Buffy in many ways was very fresh and stuff like that in some ways. And yet also she is still very much sexualized throughout the whole show and played as a romantic character. And that's a major motivation for her. Whereas Ripley, no romantic stuff, not really much. There's a little bit here and there of sexualizing her, especially because both of the movies we watched thus far have been directed by cis men. And yet like that's not a major interest in her. And she even like cuts her hair in this movie and wears kind of like in the first movie, wears more gender ambiguous androgynous clothes. So I just love that. It's rare to have that even today. So
yeah. Also my like young Power Ranger fan heart was like, it's Morphin time when she got into the big yellow loading machine. I was like, yes. Go and Power Ranger.
That line, I won't say the B word because we've talked about that specific word in past episodes. I'm trying to remember which one. I can't think of it, but I'll try to find a link in the show notes. But that line, though, is still iconic when she says, get away from her, you bee. And like that has been parodied, referenced so much throughout history, but it's still considered like ranked in many rankings of most iconic lines in a movie is usually ranked in the top 10 or 20.
I mean, a certain book series that I used to love has its own spin on like Not My Daughter, right? Like,
yeah,
which I didn't know came from this, but I guarantee it did because of
the
authors.
Sure. But yeah, I guess I got a little bit into the deep dive there ahead of time, so we'll go back to the plot. Continue gaily forward, Emily.
I did, like, when Burke turned off the camera, I was like, of course he does. Of course he's turning off the camera. And I was like, there's always a stowaway. Mm-hmm. Anytime there's, like, sticky stuff, you're like, oh, there's an alien on board. Good luck.
Yeah. And then the end of this movie just has such symmetry. You mentioned before the airlock. Mm-hmm. But then also the going back to sleep in a pod. So it ends very similarly to the first movie. And I like that callback.
Yeah. I was like, 2 points for the airlock, even if she really would not have survived that. Like, yay, she could not have held on if the alien couldn't hold on. And nobody wears their shoes that tight. Even when my shoes are on good, they're not that tight.
Yeah. So again, not too concerned with science in this movie and how stuff actually works.
Yeah. But there were, like, I was, when Newt was rescued, and I was like, okay, of course you have to have Newt, like, get caught and then rescued again. But the, like, laying down in the, like, sleep pods with Newt, I mean, in separate sleep pods, but next to each other with Newt, I was like, aww.
Yeah. It was cute. Mm-hmm. And also similar, like you were saying, Newt is the new Jonesy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always got to be a Jonesy.
Yeah.
So they tell me.
Okay, anything else? Or are we feeling deep dive?
I'm ready to dive right in. Got my oxygen mask and everything. We don't give people oxygen masks in this world.
Yeah. Diving deeply.
Diving deeply. The whole song. I'm sure yep. Baseball have just played it because that was a terrible transition for us.
Please go first.
I was just going to say, so trauma, eh?
Right.
Right, like she clearly has maybe not PTSD, but trauma. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to properly diagnose PTSD, but she is having night terrors.
Yep.
That are very realistic.
Yep.
That dream is terrifying.
Right.
And then Newt is, like, sitting there, clearly a very traumatized little girl, and the military are like, just grab her.
Yep.
That'll go great. And even Ripley does not have the best way of doing it. Like, it's not until Ripley just, like, follows her to her safe place that they finally start to connect. But, like, which just also, grabbing a traumatized person of any age when they're in the middle of, like, terror is not helpful.
Which I also kind of appreciate, though, that Ripley needs to grow into a maternal figure in this, as opposed mm-hmm. to it just being written into her character that because she's a woman, she's automatically going to be maternal to this person. And so I do like yeah. that piece, even though it's not great interaction with Newt in the beginning. But
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And grief and loss also just kind of plays throughout. And That is one thing I will say about Ripley's arc in the series is that kind of, it's especially 2, 3, and 4 in the franchise really look at continue to examine grief and the trauma that she survived and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I love that.
Yeah.
And also her willingness to kind of confront the source of her trauma, which is an interesting move and kind of cool. And we'll see how that continues to play out in future entries. mm-hmm. And then I was editing our alien episode like legit yesterday.
We're recording because
it came out today. So this is when we're recording this movie is the day that the alien episode came out. But as I was listening through the deep dive, I'm like, we actually didn't talk about religion or theology at all. And I was like, oh. And that movie is a fairly religious movie. So I'm like, I don't know. Like, we had really good deep dive, but still, we were talking more about, like, horror as a genre and talking about body horror and talking about the genitalia design of the alien and the eggs and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. it was a really good conversation. But we didn't actually talk about religion. So I'm like, I'm going to make a point to talk about religion.
Yeah, because tell me about the religion part. Because I didn't bring it up because I was like, because it didn't occur to me.
Yeah, so one of the things that I noticed about this movie is that religion is absent from the lives of the characters. They just do not have, yeah. There's no mention of religion or anything like that. People will say like, oh my God, and stuff like that. But like as a colloquialism without, mm-hmm. There doesn't seem to be a sense of God behind there. And so I just find that interesting that that was a choice. And in many ways, action movies, like you don't get into the internal lives of characters that much in the 80s kind of action movie stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like for this, the speed of the script, the pacing of the movie, you just kind of focus on the action and getting there. Mm-hmm. So like, I get that's a choice, but also I find it just fascinating that it's just absent in the movie. And mm-hmm. Also in the theming of the movie, because the first movie has this brooding kind of mysticism. And the fact that they refer to the computer as mother, who's this voice that just kind of talks out of the ether and stuff like that. And then this one, there's just nothing like that.
Yeah, which I think is also interesting. One of the people that I follow on TikTok is Sim Kern. And they are a Jewish author. And I just bought their latest book to read, which is called The Free People's Village, which is like if Gore had won the election, but it's still a futuristic dystopia. But they talk, sometimes they do, they like mention stuff about writing script, writing books and like tropes, and particularly anti-Semitic tropes. And one of the ones that they pointed out is anytime there is a culture where people are disconnected from their history or their history is doesn't matter. So like I think about the Divergent series, right? Nobody remembers their history. That is anti-Semitic because and not just anti-Semitic, right? But it is written specifically from the point of view of people who aren't as connected to their history, and like Jewish people are always connected to their history. And so having something where people just are not connected to their history, there's no telling of their history, there's no counting of their history or anything, whether or not they still hold those like religious and theological and cultural beliefs, but like that connection is always important. So I thought that was really an interesting thing, and I think it's interesting to like think about in this series and whenever we're thinking about like fantasy and science fiction and stuff, of like what are even the possibilities for cultures when they're created to not have a history or to not acknowledge their history.
And I think part, a piece of that in the universe of this movie is the universe that they're showing is hyper capitalistic and done in such a way that there, everything needs to be monetized. There is no room for creativity or imagination. And so I feel like that also is kind of a commentary on capitalism and empire in and of itself. And so this, I will say that I think that this movie is the least religious of the franchise.
Which is why we're talking about religion.
Yeah, but yet, there's still some things here. First, the planet is named in this, that the alien is on, LV-426. LV is a common abbreviation for Leviticus.
I did not know this.
So if you look up this citation, it is all its fat, he shall return into smoke on the altar, like the fat of the sacrifice of well-being. Thus the priest shall make atonement on his behalf for his sin, and he shall be forgiven. And that is the NRSV translation that I quoted there. There is this messianic theme of sacrifice that appears in this movie a few times. And first, it's kind of setting us up, I think, to think that Ripley will sacrifice herself for Newt. And that ultimately doesn't happen. It's Bishop who sacrifices himself for Newt and for Ripley. And so that's a little bit of a twist. And it's also a twist on the first movie where the robot, was the bad guy, and now he, in this movie, he's the good guy. He's the one that saves the day. Or doesn't save the day. Ripley saves the day, but he helps Ripley save the day.
Which is also fascinating. So part of what I think is interesting about that, what you're saying, Pace, is the, because last time we talked about like a redemption, we talked about redemption arcs, right? And so like we don't have a redemption arc for whatever the robot is, whoever it is, the science dude in the first one.
From the first one, Ash. Yeah.
Ash, yeah. We don't have one for Ash, which is interesting because Ash Wednesday is coming up, and now I've got all the things, right? Because Bishop and Ash, and we don't have a redemption arc for Ash. Ash just burns up. There's no redemption. And yet Bishop is the redemption arc in many ways. And part of it is that they're able to know that Bishop is a robot.
Yeah.
Which, like, Ripley didn't believe before. And so she already is, like, on her guard. And Bishop knows it. And there's, like, clear conversations and intentionality that they have that can happen because it's not sneakily added in to the crew or whatever. But also it's this, like, maybe the artificial human is not all bad, which then, like, part of me is like, and yet AI and technology, and I'm a Luddite, and I am terrified of what, quote unquote, AI is going to do right now because it's so unregulated, and it's not actually AI, and it's like filled with all of our biases, and yet people assume that it's not, and assume that it's not going to lie, and it can lie, and and it also reminded me of the Foundation. The second season of Foundation just came out, and we watched it, and
Speaking of, check out our episode on the first season with Lenny Duncan.
Yes, because that was fantastic. That's why I watched the second season, is because Lenny got us into the first season. But, and this is spoilers if you haven't finished the second season or are unfamiliar with the books, but the, who's the robot in that one?
I don't remember.
What's her name? The servant person.
I don't remember her name.
Demerzel. Laura Byrne plays Demerzel. Demerzel has sworn, has like been programmed that she cannot harm. Demerzel has been programmed so that she cannot harm humans, but then that shifts a little bit, but also is like programmed to be loyal to the Cleon, to Cleon. And then it turns out that like, in the end, the loyalty is actually to the first Cleon and not to all the Cleons, and what that looks like for Empire and for all of these different, like, it's just fascinating. But that like dynamic of like how we restrict and don't restrict, and
but that was also making me, I need to watch season two because that's fascinating. But also it makes me think of the Matrix franchise, which I think we need to cover on this podcast too. We'll just add it to the list. There's so much goodness and intentional religious stuff going on in those movies. So yeah, we'll probably do a BooTube on season two of Foundation at some point. One of these days. But I think that AI and technology in general, but AI specifically, is something that we will need to track and talk about in our retrospective for the Alien franchise, because it keeps coming back and it's very interesting. That also kind of makes me think of one of the questions of right to life in that this movie brings up, and the question of, and of course, we know that people who are anti-abortion, anti-choice, use right to life in a intentionally bad way. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about the sense of, do people have, does Bishop have a right to life as an android, or is he not, or does he not? Do the aliens as a living species have a right to life and just exist as they are? They are not intent, they are the antagonists in this movie because they are the top of the food chain, but they are not, but that's why they're the antagonists. They don't have an agenda other than trying to eat and survive. So, and it's the humans who come in with the agenda to use them and turn them into a commodity. And so the question
is like, the humans just cannot abide by not being the top of the food chain.
So then it just kind of, so this franchise, that's the other kind of question I think we'll have to say, is what is this franchise saying about this? In the first movie, the alien was very much meant not to have, there is the morals that people assign to it, but the director also has gone on record saying that the alien is also meant to just be acting out of animalistic instinct and the instinct to survive, and it's these humans that are interfering with it and preventing it from doing that. And so any reading of the alien as villain is something that we are doing from a human perspective,
right? Because we value humanity and human life more than the alien's right to be alive. Which, like, admittedly, the alien's way of being alive kills humans, so like there's that, like, there's that aspect of like,
and the humans it has killed thus far have all invaded its territory. They have all landed on the alien's planet.
Did they in the first movie?
Yeah.
I thought there was something, there was like a something that like brought them there.
Yeah, there is a distress call, which we find out in the first movie. The distress call was planted there by the corporation to get people to go there.
Oh,
and that's why Ash was working
doing
that all along. That was kind of the deal with Ash. And so they go to the planet. The humans don't know what they're doing, but there's an evil intention from the corporation using them to go into the alien, find the eggs, and bring it back to the corporation.
How does the corporation even know that it exists?
That's the question. Like, so we will see if the franchise answers that. And hint, it does. We'll get there. So there's all sorts of complicated things in here. The alien is clearly the antagonist, and also that there's intentional questions about, like, is the alien actually bad, or is the alien just neutral and it's us who invading it, the territory, who are the actual villains in the story?
How
or
did
the corporation being the villain, to be clear, because
the corporation
is using
villain.
The people. Using the people against their knowledge and will to invade the aliens. Territory.
All corporations are bad.
Yes.
That's fascinating, though.
So, and then motherhood is the last kind of religious theme that that'll keep coming back. But just the concept of the alien mother, Ripley be kind of taking on a mother role here, and also with that deleted scene of her being a mother that we find out.
Yeah, later. and that is tied up. I don't know if you mentioned grief yet, but like that's also tied up in grief, right? Like the shifting her grief into care for someone else, which is complicated and understandable kind of thing. Also, I did not want Vasquez to die, but saw it coming, obviously.
Yeah.
And I loved when Vasquez and Gorman sacrificed themselves together to keep from feeding the alien side. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. So, yay, Vasquez and Gorman.
Agreed.
Also, this is, you know, obviously a case of patriarchy.
And capitalism.
Strikes again.
Yep.
So, again, Ripley is the only competent person here. Also, like, the way that she's trying to comfort Newt is, like, as she's cleaning her face, hard to believe there's a girl under all this, pretty one, too. Like, why do you have to comment on that? Where is that necessary or appropriate?
Yep.
The answer is nowhere. Unnecessary. Inappropriate. I did get to the point where I was, at one point, I was like, you know, Hicks is pretty okay. Wow, I have just a fire truck coming. apparently. Oh, yeah. No, but I got to the point where I was like, Hicks is pretty okay because he pays attention and he listens to Ripley and follows her lead instead of like everybody else who's like, psh. Yeah. So I was like, okay, Hicks is pretty okay. And then I think you're the first one that said that the misogyny in the 20 whatevers is, you know, kind of the same as the misogyny of the 1986.
2300 or whatever year it is. I think it's 2300 or something like that.
Weird how that misogyny is. Just
interesting.
Exactly and there's a way that they poke fun at it more, I think. It's maybe more obvious in this one because it really is like all of them are hyped up and then like they all lose. It doesn't save any of them, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that also kind of gets to the genre-defying aspect again. And I already talked about it, so I won't go into it too much, aside from just the fact that on the sexist side, people have called her Rambess because of her being Rambo, the female version of Rambo. So she's Rambess, and she's in space. So that's like a pop culture term for her, which is so sexist. She is her own thing. Do not call her the female Rambo. And then, but also
Rambess is just no.
Yeah, right. But also, both actors and directors have cited Ripley, especially in this movie, as a source of inspiration for future action women who are action heroes, such as Buffy Vampire Slayer. Joss Whedon has talked about this movie a lot. Alice in the Resident Evil series. I know Mila Jovovich has talked about the actor who plays Atlas talks about this movie being a source of inspiration for that and stuff. So it's just, I love that this movie kind of has this lasting impact of women can be action heroes too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So the lore.
Yeah. I think we'll have to add AI to, we already talked about it, but for future ones, we'll have to add AI to make sure we talk on what movie comments about AI.
Yeah. We'll call it a alien lore. Perfect. You can't even tell because capital I's and capital L's in Arial font look the exact same.
There we go. Oh, that fine. Makes it a little bit easier to read.
I guess. yeah, I thought it was really interesting. It's like a hive style kind of thing.
Yeah.
The one like alien just like alien. Pumps out all the eggs that just like sit and incubate kind of for a while.
Graphic too. And I compared to the first one, like under showing the alien, this one like goes out of its way to show the queen alien, especially like huge yeah. shots of her throughout the last act of the movie.
She like her like the whatever tube, her fallopian tube or whatever.
Yeah.
Really, I was had like visceral memories of those like kind of spring like tubes that we used to play in as a kid, where like you could flatten it, but then that like bounced out and you could crawl through it, and it was just like fabric around wire. That's basically what it is, just yeah. more colorful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, this is the second movie in a row, so I'm going to go with it that like if you ever find sticky alien goo, sticky goo, assume that the alien is on board that or inside.
Yep. We'll see if that continues to play out. I like it.
It's a real clear tell right now.
Yep. 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 So it's the two ways to tell that there's something bad going on in the Alien franchise thus far is A, Ripley warns everybody and she is ignored. And two, there's sticky goo somewhere. And I will say, I think we can probably count on both of those continuing for a while. Mm-hmm. In the franchise. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, we also didn't talk about the fact that Burke? So immemorable.
Don't give him a non-binary name. He is not Burke.
I know, right? The bee. Wants to impregnate Ripley and Newt with the aliens.
Uh-huh.
Which, like, I do think that this one does a better job of, like, right to bodily autonomy as, like, a thing. Both in terms of, like, that's the thing is, like, the pushback from Ripley's perspective, at least, is, like, no, we have a right to our own bodily autonomy
mm-hmm.
for her and Newt. But also, just in general, for all of the humans, that, like, the aliens do not have a right to to use us. And kill us in order to yeah. reproduce. And I think right now, particularly where we're at in the state of this country.
I miss that about eight. There's this period of movies in the late, from about mid-80s to the early 90s, where women in film could talk about abortion and talk about bodily autonomy in a way that it is so taboo to mention in film in general today. That it wasn't in the 80s and 90s for some reason. Because and there, we also see pushback to that. Roe v. Wade
wasn't like controversial when it passed. Like,
yep. Yeah. And I mean, we also see kind of the pendulum swinging the other way with that too. With like when we talked about A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5, The Dream Child, which also came out in this period of 80s mm-hmm. and 90s.
But, yeah, that's a whole other.
Yeah. And then the other kind of piece of alien lore I got is that the first movie, Ripley muses that it seems like the Wutani company wants to use it for the military once she finds out that the Wutani is whose corporation is who set them. But this one, it confirms it. It's actually like what the intention was. So.
Ugh. Yeah. There's so much good, like people say that the defense is like the only reason we have GPS and stuff, and I'm like, okay, but like we could just pay people to experiment. and explore and not have to have one of the options for why they're doing it be to figure out how best to kill people.
Right. Like, our space program is what gave us certain innovations in pens and stuff like that. And also, well, all sorts of innovations, but pens is one of the things we got from the space program. Like, we can have inventions in other areas than military.
We could just budget for inventions. Yeah. It'd be great. Agreed.
Yeah. So out of...
We did kyber crystals last time.
Yeah, I kind of want something different. I'm thinking, like, we definitely didn't want to do the alien itself or the eggs. But could we do, like, the face hugger? I love the face hugger. It's cute. Or is that still a no? It can be a no. That's fine.
How many, I don't even know how to... it just does not compute that way.
Okay, then we won't do that
for me. I mean, we could do how many Jonesies.
How many Jonesies? Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, because Jonesy knows when the alien is there.
How many alien jazz hands? Since we got that in both the first one and this one.
How many jazz hands? Okay. How many jazz hands?
So out of either how many xenomorph jazz hands or how many Jonesies you pick, it can be either one. How many would you rate this? And do you have a favorite kill?
My favorite kill is Brick. Obvs. The worst. I think I would rate this a 7.5. The military just brings it down a bit. Otherwise, it's like a solid movie. Yeah. I was like trying to not just rate everything in the really high up, but I am terrible.
Sometimes they're just really good franchises, but don't worry. Like you have been warned for this franchise. It goes downhill pretty quickly.
Yeah. So 7.5. Jazz hands.
I love it.
How about you?
I think it'll be the same for me, honestly. 7.5 jazz hands. It's a really fun movie. I do love the moodiness and depth of the first entry, but I also think that this one can have not much depth at all, just be a fairly straightforward action movie and still be really fun and get a high rating. And my favorite kill, I think, will be Hudson, because he's kind of a jerk. The Bill which Paxton one? Character.
The which one?
Bill Paxton. He was the one that had the bandana on for some scenes. He was like the extra amped up chauvinistic.
I think he's a lot of the one who spit down the hole that had been burned.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Alien acid blood. Yeah, I didn't like him either. He was originally going to be my favorite kill, but then I didn't know who it was. Which jacked up military dude spit down the hole.
I love that you keep calling him Brick, but he's Brick. How many jump scares did you have, if any, for this one?
I had 1.5.
Nice.
I had one that was like if I had been like glued on in, it would have been one, but it wasn't. And then I had a half, and then I had a one that was like, okay, that was a jump scare. So, yeah. What about you? Did you have any jump scares?
No jump scares. I was also, when Emily and I watch the movies together usually, and then I think I said this before too on the podcast, but like I usually try to watch it one time after, and I didn't have time to watch it one time after this time. But the first time I watched it with Emily, I was so stoned that like, I barely remember watching it. So most of my notes for this are from having seen it many times. But I have no memory.
That actually explains a lot. Because some of your comments that you put in, I was like, my comments happened before that.
Yeah, I don't quite remember the chronology of the movie. Yeah, so it's probably been like 3 years since I saw like it where I focused and watched it, whereas this one I watched it super stoned, so I just have a little bit of a hit or miss memory of it. But yeah, So our next movie.
Our next movie is Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi.
And then in 2 weeks from the day this episode is dropping, we are covering Alien 3 or Alien Cubed.
Alien to the Third Power.
Which we are watching the theatrical cut. And do not worry, for those of you who love the assembly cut, we're going to watch that. And have that be the Alien episode after that one. But our next one is a theatrical cut of Alien Cubed. And we'll have Dr. Mae Forrest Barnes on to talk about that movie with us.
Yeah. I'm very excited for it. Mm-hmm. And that is it for our show, dear Earthlings, non-Earthlings, rocks in space. Voyager 1 is glitching. This is what time it is. Voyager 1 is glitching, sending out a short binary loop. And they're trying to problem solve, but problem solving with a 45-hour delay is a bit tricky.
Yep.
So, shout out to Voyager 1 if you can hear us. We love you. Right in your little spot by the foot of whatever constellation you're by.
I love V'ger too, for you Star Trek fans. Oh, minor spoilers. You'll forget by the time I watch Star Wars, though. So.
Absolutely, I will. Our theme music was by Matt May. Horror Nerds at Church releases seasonally on Thursdays. Please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Support us on Patreon and get access to exclusive movie commentary episodes, BooTube episodes, and more bonus content by going to patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. Starting at only $5 to sign up, it is cheaper than Ripley or Newt's therapy bills. follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Horror Nerds at Church, and Blue Sky on Twitter at HNACPOD for all the latest updates about upcoming films, news, and other announcements. Until next time, never trust the corporations.
I love it.
I forgot that I had that part.